So I'm going to try not to bore you guys too much. You'll be looking at this blank screen because we don't have slides. My name is Lenore Curell. I'm a member of the United Homo Nation, and I've been working with our tribe since I was a teenager. And one of the things for me is you grow up particularly with understanding what your traditional medicines are and things like that. And for our tribe, we are one of the few tribes that are native to Louisiana that continue to still reside in Louisiana. But we are part of a network of sister tribes along the southeast, and so we share a lot in common with both like the Choctaw, the Chickasaws, the Creeks. We're all mound builders and things like that, and we all have a strong love of plants within our traditional medicines. And so for our community, we live now currently in southeast Louisiana, all along the coast. We're very similar. I think a lot of people are surprised to learn that we're probably a lot more similar to Alaskan natives than we are to people out in Oklahoma, because our communities exist primarily as kind of like fishing communities. And so we live in the areas that are very swampy, you know, and our people always lived off of the land, so they moved significantly during time periods. And so within, I would say, probably our last five generations, the swamp conditions became where traditional plants were primarily harvested. One of the things is that our traditional medicine is really hinged primarily on plant medicines and prayer. The plant medicines are much more shared among the community, whereas the other portion is really reserved for what we would call our traditional medicine people, our traiteurs. And so the plant medicine at points in time, we have struggles, you know, when you think of culture and things like that. A lot of kind of how like your plants change over time, well, culture will change in that way too. And so what we see is the traditional way of passing down information doesn't always get there to some of our young people. And so we're seeing a lot less knowledge of some of that medicinal knowledge from, you know, for instance, like my grandparents, it would have been second nature. My mother was a little bit less. For me, it's a little bit less, and I make a concerted effort to try to learn more and teach the kids that I work with in my work more. And so we have that effort to do that. The other things that are struggles for us are a lot of the plants grow in areas that are significantly challenged for us due to changes in the coast of Louisiana. We have coastal erosion that's affecting us, and so areas where were traditional places that you could harvest some of the plants are gone. The swamplands, or, you know, you guys have been in New Orleans for a couple of days now, and so when you think of the city of New Orleans, the where you are now is the highest point in the city. Everywhere else around you in all of the suburbs were literally swamp areas that were pumped out to build homes. So a lot of the swampy areas and things like that have been developed. And so access to some of those plants have gotten very, very difficult. The other thing we see is because they grow primarily in a lot of like water areas and things like that, people think they're weeds, they'll spray pesticides on them, and for our people, they're gonna wild harvest it. And so you have to be extraordinarily cautious and make sure you've got an access to the plants that haven't been sprayed with pesticides. So some of the common things for us, and I apologize, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to, you know, give you all of the scientific names and things like that. And the challenge for us also in having conversations with you guys are that our people traditionally have different names, you know, so we'll call them different things. So, of course, peppermint grows wild here in abundance. And so primarily we've always used that peppermint spearmint, colds, coughs, congestion, things like that. Elderberry is used pretty significantly. We use the bark primarily for teas, and a lot of times that's for fevers, infection. And then the leaves themselves have been used for putting on the body directly And the belief is that it actually draws fever and infection from the body. So if somebody maybe has a wound and there's concern, an open wound, and there's concern about an infection setting in or them developing a fever from that, they would often just put the elderberry leaves directly on that open wound and wrap it. Banana leaves, we would say, we would call it a coup de soleil, a sunstroke, if you spent too much time out in the sun. And so, you know, I remember even as a child, this was something my mom would go in the backyard and we'd have, you know, a banana plant in the backyard, and she'd take the leaves and she would wrap it around your head, and it was that it would pull that fever and that heat from your body. Plantain is used extensively. It's pretty a core plant that's used. We've used it for inflammation primarily, and we do a lot of things in teas, you know, as a tea. Mule's foot has been used for cuts and abrasions. They'll also use it to pack wounds to stop bleeding. One of the things for me is there was something we always called, and I always heard growing up, they would call it citronelle. And I never knew till I was much older, and it's probably been maybe 3 years that I knew that that is now lemongrass that's commonly used. And so those were used for us for teas, primarily for indigestion, stomach ailments. Nightshade is used, and you know, that's something we have huge concerns, the tribe does, because it certainly has poisonous effects, and if people don't know the correct way to use it, but also that for that is to be able to help with, you know, ailments and helping relieve pains and aches. And then we have a tribal elder, and he's the person I really kind of go to if I want to discuss plants. And saw palmetto grows in our communities, and he refers to that as the natural Viagra. It's so, you know, just interesting things of how some of our people use that. I literally do have in my backyard, we call it prel. Lots of people know it primarily as horsetail. And we use that for kidney infections. So it'll be balled and made into a tea for kidney infections. The challenges we're really looking at and thinking next steps from the tribal perspective, because we recognize there's this huge loss and the importance of it and how much it's a part of who we are as Indian people, is preservation. You know, how do we approach that? What do we need to do? We do have plans right now, and we're working with one of the universities, University of Mississippi, to develop a walking trail, and that our traditional plants will be identified and included as part of that trail, so that our kids, it's constantly as part of something for people to know it's part of who we are. And developing a greenhouse, you know, so that there's a way for our elders, because they hold that knowledge. They carry that knowledge, and we don't want to see it go on with another generation. And so a greenhouse where we can work on preserving those plants, they're really difficult for people to access. And how do we, you know, determine the best way for people to have access to the safe plants for use? Definitely education and making sure, you know, that the knowledge of the plants gets passed on to those next generations. And, you know, some of the issues, and I think if any of you guys have worked with any tribes in the areas, there's a huge issue of what do you disclose and what do you not. What do you make public and give free access to, and what do you hold close that's just private for your tribe? And I think those are things for us we still struggle with. And it's conversations I've seen our tribal council go back and forth on. We do have like a master list of some of the traditional plants and what they're commonly known as opposed to the scientific names, what they're used for, how they're prepared. But it's not something we make available to the public. It's not something they've done. And just have a concern of where do you draw the line of, you know, so if we turn this over to someone, do they take it and commercialize it? And then the issue of if you do go commercial with, you know, preserving it and, you know, who gets to make that money, so to speak? And so those are huge internal discussions of that balance of sharing your culture and sharing the information that has been passed on for generations, but how do we What and it essentially is, I guess, as easy of a question of what do you say for yourself and what do you share with others? And I don't know that we have that answer at this point. It's something we still, I think, are struggling with and trying to figure that out. But I want to say thank you for having me here. I appreciate the opportunity to share kind of some local culture with you. Welcome to Louisiana, and happy to take any questions.
Any questions? We have time here.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give that to anyone. But if you're making something good that people would want to use, a company will work with you to market it to and you will get that money if you can keep the formulation.
Right. There is something, I'll gladly share this with anyone because this is my recipe. So you know, I could care less. I've like helped the world. Is some of the things that I do, and this has just been my personal exploration and that kind of stuff, is I make salves and rubs and things like that for people within the tribe, and you know, I probably give away much more than I ever sell, which is part of who we are, unfortunately. But one of the things I did was mixing some things to make an arthritis rub. And so I often get elders that come and say, like, you know, can you make me some, or do you have any more? And it's a simple blend of plantain, spearmint, and cayenne pepper infused in oil.
Right. But if you don't tell people exactly how, then they always need you and your tribe could.
Right.
That would be a valuable source of income.
Yeah.
If a company, if this batch preparation is identical, they would be happy to make it. And you
right.
The trouble of formulation, as long as it can be reproduced, and then you can keep the money within the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments?
It's okay. I'm all right. I'm not a scientist, so you know, I'm not going to wow you with all of these names and those kinds of things. I said, even if I had PowerPoints for you, I would have showed pictures and said, can you tell me what this is?
Well, one last question, where can we buy salves like that?
Just talk to me after. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. We have, and that's our discussion with University of Mississippi, and what they have is they have a medicine wheel garden, and it has traditional plants that are used all throughout the Southeast. Our tribe maintains a list of things that are exclusive for us. What helped with that relationship is the person who operates it is one of our tribal members. That's where we've had the conversations of, you know, how do we match that. It's interesting to find, though, that things we may know as certain things were consistently used across all of the tribes. You know, there are some very similar, you know, uses and plants. The other thing, too, is there are some plants that are not necessarily traditional to this area, but were brought here by other tribes. So this is, when you think of New Orleans was a historic trade route among tribes. The French market that some of you may have visited originally started as a place for the native people in the area to come and sell their wares to the settlers. And so for us, we had a lot of interaction with a lot of tribes at different points in our history, and there's been lots of exchange.
Thank you very much.